Offside with Andrew Gunling and JJ Devaney.
To play the final is so amazing. I want to remember my family. It's for them too. For the people that support us in that moment, it's amazing to reward them. And thank you. And we need to be ready now for the next game Sunday and then to prepare the final in Madrid.
Bit of tears, but tears of joy tonight as well. Mauricio, congratulations. Well done.
Oh, yes. Caught offside from the Upper West Side of Manhattan. Andrew Gunling and JJ Devaney. And that was Mauricio Pochettino on May 8th of this year, the night that Tottenham knocked Ajax out of the Champions League in the semifinal and advanced to a Champions League final for the first time in their history. And here we are on November 19th, 7 months later, and he has been fired by Tottenham. And for me, we've done a lot of emergency podcasts, some fun, some not fun. We've done, you know, the Jurgen Klinsmann firing, Jose Mourinho's various firings over the years. But I don't know, maybe it's because of the personal nature of this for me, but I don't know if any of these emergency podcasts have been quite as stunning to me as this one. I always knew there was a possibility of this, but I don't know. For some, you texted me today. That was how I found out. And it just hit me like a punch to the gut, and I couldn't believe it.
And me being the bearer of bad news probably added a little.
Well, you couldn't wait to send that text message.
No, I got it. So I was actually in the doctor's surgery. I was in seeing a neurosurgeon, more of that anon.
Oh, my God.
And I get out, and my phone blows up because I had no reception inside. And it's just people in disbelief and asking for an emergency podcast. It's a weird time for this to happen. It's interesting because yesterday, the Independent, like the noises were there, but I was thinking the end of the season, like this would be, he would do this season, that would be it. The Independent has been told that the situation has reached such a level that intermediaries have started to investigate potential replacements. That was yesterday.
This clearly escalated at a rate that now, I think, now, even his biggest detractor was not expecting.
Now, what we know is there were meetings, very high-level meetings of the board, and Levy and Pochettino met to discuss what was going on and the form of the team and all those things. And something must have happened in those meetings where there was not an agreement, but where Levy clearly sensed, this won't get better, we need to move now. But it's a very, very strange time to make this move.
Yeah, I'm only glad, I guess, that it was just a couple weeks ago where I finally had my, like, on the one podcast where we talked about Tottenham recently, and I had my sort of revelatory, okay, here's my official position on Pochettino. And I laid it out there that I believed he should not be fired and that he should be allowed to see this through. And I sit here today still feeling that way. I still feel unchanged in that stance. And part of that, I guess, is why I am so shocked by this, because I really truly believe that he helped bring this club to a level that was just kind of like previously unthought of for Tottenham. And I just think that there's merit to that valued bare minimum the remainder of this season. And in my opinion, certainly another transfer window, another summer transfer window where he's backed by Daniel Levy and quite honestly, another season. But we'll get to all of that. We'll go through various elements of this firing by Tottenham. And we will later on in the podcast, we will talk a little bit about the U.S. men. They're playing Cuba as we speak. They scored 40 seconds in. You and I have the game on a monitor next to us here.
Yes.
So we're watching that. Really not even so much to talk about what happens tonight against Cuba. Not to be those guys, but we kind of expect a certain result tonight. We'll talk a little bit more about what happened against Canada and just kind of the state of things as this portion of the Nations League winds down. But yeah, right now it's Tottenham and it's Mauricio Pochettino. I saw this tweet, JJ, from Gary Lineker. He said, Mauricio Pochettino has been sacked by @Spurs official. He helped the club to punch massively above their weight for years. Good luck with finding a better replacement. Ain't going to happen. That was Gary Lineker.
Yeah. I mean, right now as we sit here, it's very hard to think of somebody who can just come in and do what he's done. It's been amazing. Again, I want to, before we kind of analyze exactly why this firing may have come about. It's important to look back and I'm sure there's listeners who are sick of me saying this, but he turned Spurs into a bit of a joke.
Well, that I'll take umbrage with that, but I get what your point is. They certainly were not viewed in the light. We always talk about the lads at Spurs. You know, we always talk about that comment, and that was kind of how they were viewed—a good club, but one that the biggest clubs in the league always felt that they should be beating.
And people are going to go to me and say, "Well, how you can't say that because look at what Harry Redknapp had done." Yeah, but look, Harry Redknapp had a nice little bubble where there was Champions League qualification and the team were clicking, but they are a pale comparison to what Maurizio Pochettino built. Maurizio Pochettino did something that hadn't been done. I mean, we're talking since Bill Nicholson in terms of consistent achievement. We're talking about a top four establishment team. They were never that.
No.
And they became that under Pochettino. This is an incredible legacy. Sorry, I can't believe I'm talking about legacy here. I can't believe he's gone, but that's where what he did was amazing. Now, again, people say, oh, you know, trophies. Like, would an FA Cup, would a League Cup have made any difference? I don't believe so. I really don't. We've moved on in football. We've moved on from that. It was regular Champions League qualification, and it was a European Cup final, something the club had never done before. It was what he's done has been amazing.
So the thing that we always do on these podcasts after a manager gets fired is we sit down and we hash out the million-dollar question, which is always, was this deserved? So I've kind of broken this down into two categories for your base info on Pochettino. And I just have the good and the bad. And then we can kind of come together and reconcile the two. So the good, to me, are the obvious ones. Champions League final. Runner-up in the League Cup his first year with the club. Third fastest manager to reach 100 Premier League wins at a single club, only behind Alex Ferguson and Jose Mourinho. Led Tottenham to their three best finishes in the Premier League, a second, a third, and a third. Navigated them through the Wembley years with zero drop-off. Dealt with the first transfer window in league history with zero signings. And an underrated one that I don't think means a ton to non-Spurs fans, but really means a lot to Spurs fans. Went unbeaten at home in White Hart Lane's final year, including a win over Arsenal and a win over Manchester United in their final game at the old stadium. And I think those will be moments that I think Tottenham fans hold dear, almost in the same way that they hold dear the Champions League run of last season.
Now, those are all nice things, but you've left out the most important thing to me, the identity of the team on the field. They became a team that was good at the back, that was exciting going forward, that pressed, that had young talent, that brought through one of Europe's most consistent strikers and England's most consistent striker since Alan Shearer. There was so much good there.
Yeah. Now the bad.
Oh.
No trophies, of course, after several close calls. But let's be honest, like you just said, that is not what this is about.
No.
He is not being fired today because he hadn't won a trophy at Tottenham. I honestly think, like you said, if he had won an FA Cup or a League Cup, he'd still be getting fired today. I don't think that's what any of this has to do with. This is about the end of last year and the beginning of this year. Tottenham's 14 points through 12 games are the club's fewest since the 08-09 Spurs. Spurs' 14 points this season are 13 points worse off than at the same stage of last season when they were fourth with 27 points from 12 games. They were eliminated from the Carabao Cup in a shootout after failing to score a goal against fourth-tier Colchester United. Blew a 2-0 lead at Olympiacos, ended up drawing that 2-2. In their next Champions League game, humiliated by Bayern Munich, losing 7-2 after being tied 1-1 at the half. Club is winless in its last 12 Premier League away games. Its last away Premier League win came in January last season against Fulham. Tottenham's 12-game Premier League winless streak is the club's longest since May of 2000 to January of 2001. There's a lot of bad that has happened in the last
year,
say 9 months or so.
Can I add something in?
Of course.
Somebody wanted me, some people on social media wanted me to pour fuel on the flames, really, just to get at
it's
you.
It's all fair game tonight.
No, I don't want to do that. But
I deserve it,
this
quite
one,
frankly.
This one stood out to me from Opta Joe. 18, no ever-present Premier League club, meaning founder members, never been relegated, has lost more games in all competition in all competitions during 2019 than Tottenham Hotspur have under Maurizio Pochettino. 18 dismissed. And that's, I think, really what it came down to. The manager looked at the overall health of the team on the field and got very, very freaked out and has made a decision. We talk about cycles and phases, and Miguel Delaney has been on top of kind of what's happening at Spurs for a long time now, and a lot of what he talked about has come to pass. He did an article in September about the state of the club. See, I'm interested to see what you think of this. He talked about the message going stale. He talked about players inside saying, it doesn't matter, Pochettino does everything the same way now. And he talked about his idol, who was Sir Alex Ferguson. And Sir Alex, he had a cull every 4 years. You were out. And the senior players that needed to be moved on, your Vertonghens, possibly your Alderweireld's, possibly your Eriksen's, they never kind of moved on. And there was a frustration from Pochettino that he couldn't replenish the team in the way that he wanted to, because the club was negotiating the stadium move. The chairman was clearly involved in that. And also the chairman is a very shrewd operator, and he wants value for what's being sold. And sometimes you just have to take a loss. We see that with Ed Woodward at United, big time. Well, wants big money for guys who aren't underperforming instead of getting them out and getting them off the payroll. And so what you had was discontented senior pros hanging around the club, and it's fed onto the field, it's fed onto performances. They don't play anything like they used to in their heyday, which would have been, what, 16, 17? Mm-hmm. And this is where we are right now. And like me and you always say, you can't fire 22 squad players. Sometimes the message needs to change, therefore the manager needs to change.
Yeah, I think that's what happened. And I'll be honest, a lot of what you're saying rings true in terms of the players and this four-year cycle that Sir Alex Ferguson always talks about. And you know what? If we believe that to be the case, and I feel bad saying this because Daniel Levy has certainly played a large part in Tottenham also getting to this point. It's not just about Pochettino.
Yeah,
it's not just about Kane. Daniel Levy is also responsible for their success. But you know what? Pochettino's firing today is also in part because Daniel Levy failed Maurizio Pochettino. I don't think there's any other way that you can see it, because you're right. There was some sort of refreshing that had to go on in this club. And maybe you didn't see the negative effects right away of Tottenham not making any signings in the transfer window 2 summers ago. But I think you're seeing it now. And, you know, players who, like you said, the message has gone stale with, that needed to be moved out, that weren't. And I think that's, you know, that's a gift and a curse. You want to keep teams together. You want to keep cores together. But you also have to recognize when certain players are just not buying in anymore. And I think we are seeing that in certain players at this club. I don't know that it's Eriksen and Vertonghen and Alderweireld, but we can guess that a lot of these guys who are in the final years of their contracts, who have talked openly about wanting to move on, are probably some of those guys. And the fact that they weren't, and the fact that they're still there and maybe don't want to be there, I think we're seeing now that it in part cost this manager his job. And that's unfortunate. And, you know, I was saying to you just before we sat down to record this that I'm really having a hard time reconciling this situation, because in my heart, I'm truly sad that it came to this today, because what this man has meant to this club, it's, you know, he's just so interwoven now in the fabric of Tottenham's history. Like you mentioned Bill Nicholson.
Yeah.
You know, he's now, like, he's not Bill Nicholson in terms of what Nicholson meant to the club, but he might be the second greatest manager, him or Keith Birkinshaw. Like,
yeah,
that's what you're talking about here if when you're looking at the history of this club.
You're absolutely right.
So, like, it's honestly sad. No one wanted to see it come to this, and I truly believe that what he's achieved over the last several seasons, he's earned the right to have some sort of, you know, summer transfer window to rebuild this, to try. Like, I trust him more than anyone else to find his way out of this mess that they are in. But I also, for all the people who wanted to tune in to this podcast tonight and wanted to hear me yell and scream and freak out on those who believed this was the right move, while I disagree with it and I wouldn't have done it, it is also hard for me to sit here and call those people morons or idiots and say that, you know, you're completely off base. I mean, like, a lot of those numbers that I read off over what, like, when is the right time to fire somebody? How bad do things need to get?
But also, it's, do you see signs that they can be better? We've seen blips. managers have blips and you think, oh, that was a sticky patch. Now they've straightened out. They're on the right road again. I don't see this getting better.
No, this is, we've said for honestly for months now that this is more than just a blip, and the Champions League run of last season papered over those cracks. So like we it would be hypocritical of me to sit here tonight and not understand at all where something like this is coming from. I just think it's unfortunate. I just have a trust in him. I've seen him too many times dig Tottenham out of holes when people said, oh, they're out of the race, and then they find their way back in it. Sure, they didn't win a Premier League title over the past several seasons, but like, how many times did it seem like they were buried and he brought them back into the race? And Champions Leagues, you know, Ajax, Manchester City, you know, I've seen him beat Real Madrid, Borussia Dortmund on a few occasions in the Champions League. I've just seen him win too many important matches and come up big in too many big moments for this club to think that he couldn't do it one more time. And that's the difficult part in this.
The temperature on Twitter, by the way, we were flooded, and we continue to be flooded in our mentions, which is very nice. People very concerned about you, first of all.
I got a lot of how's he doing?
Yeah. Which is nice.
I know. It's very nice.
A lot of people, though, are of the opinion that this is the wrong decision. And, for example, my favorite name in the world, by the way, Dalton Vanderberg. They've had an awful start this year. Cannot believe they fired him after the Champions League. Audibly gasped at work when I saw this come up.
I can relate.
Spurs fan one, Brendan Breasley. Ridiculous. This man made Tottenham a world brand. He wasn't given the money to revamp the squad by our penny-pinching chairman, and he gets the sack while we are still battling in the Champions League. This is disgusting. Worst decision ever. There's some people who genuinely feel like this.
I won't tell anyone how to feel. This is such a, like, I don't know. Again, I keep saying this, but it's hard for people who don't support this club, I think, to understand how Tottenham supporters feel about this man, just simply because, like, you used the term joke, and
that was a bit harsh.
I said, I don't know if I agree with that, but I get what you're saying, and there are people that view Tottenham as that, a person who does that, that takes something that is viewed as a laughingstock and makes it into, like you said, a respectable brand, competing regularly for major trophies, a thing that was never on the radar for that. Like, this guy, he's held in a regard that I don't know what else to compare him to for other clubs. Now, the one thing that I was looking at that I almost myself felt like a bit of a hypocrite when I was going through this. How can I sit here and say, how dare you fire this man when only a few years ago, I was sitting here and saying Leicester City have to fire Claudio Ranieri.
Mm.
So people who have listened to this podcast for a long time that remember when we had those conversations, because that was controversial when you and I, we were one of only a couple voices out there saying that he should be fired. So I felt like I needed to at least address the seemingly hypocritical nature of that comparison.
Okay.
And the only thing that I can say about that is Leicester's situation was dire. Tottenham's is worrisome. Maybe I'm underselling the nature of Tottenham's situation, but let me just take you back to where Leicester City were. First of all, it was late February, all right? Pochettino's being fired in mid to late November.
They were the reigning champions as well.
They were also the reigning – Leicester were the reigning champions. Tottenham are reigning Champions League runner-up. But the thing with Leicester City, like, do people remember what was happening when – Ranieri was fired? They gave the man every chance to try and work that club out of the situation they were in. They were 1 point clear of relegation. They hadn't scored a goal from January 1st all the way until Ranieri was fired at the end of February. Almost 2 months went by without scoring a goal in the league. Their situation, to me, was on a level that is different than that of Tottenham. Tottenham's not getting relegated.
Okay.
All right, this year might be a lost year, but like, Pochettino could still find his way out of this in some way next season. Like, there may not have been a next season for Leicester with the way things were going.
Couple of things. You're going to get killed for the reigning Champions League runner-up comment. You're going to get killed for that.
I don't care.
But you just threw it in as it was a useful device to describe the situation. I also think, Andrew, you've got to look at the time span in which Ranieri was in charge. Ranieri took over from the Sergeant Major General who got the sack at the end. He took over and, you know, within a year had transformed the team. Do you know what I mean? Like, so I'm not saying he didn't build something at Leicester. He certainly did. He built a style of play, etc. But he didn't do what Mauricio Pochettino did over a five-year span. So I don't think you have to worry about that comparison. I think calling for...
I thought about it. Yeah. As I was sitting here saying, like, how could they do this? He deserves the right to turn it around. Well, that's the same thing that people were saying about Ranieri. He deserves the right to turn this around.
Yeah, I know. I don't think they're comparable.
How much of this is on the players versus the manager?
I think a huge amount. I think, first of all, and obviously these players get a pass, the players... There have been significant injuries at times that have hurt Spurs. There's no question about that. Even, you know, bringing in new players who haven't kind of slotted into the team straight away. That's kind of been a frustration for Pochettino. The players have not been at it. A lot of them seem laboured on the ball. I mean, you could never, I suppose. Son is one of the exceptions. But some of them, like, for example, look at the goalkeeper who is unfortunately injured right now. Not exactly leading by example. They've been weak at the back. Look at some of the goals that they've conceded in terms of, look at the experience. It's terrible. Their fullbacks. Just... Now, that's where I drift into the area. You know, Serge Aurier, signed by Pochettino. You know, Lo Celso, Ndombele. These guys, you know, were signed by Pochettino and he hasn't really integrated them into the squad yet.
They were hurt.
Yeah, exactly. So there's injuries there. That's, I guess he gets a pass on that.
Yes.
Dele Alli was hurt too. He's consistently hurt. Harry Kane has kept scoring despite the fact he is maybe even diminished from the injuries that he's picked up as well. So these are mitigating factors too. I suppose in key positions, maybe the fullbacks, the signings he's made haven't worked out. But it does come down to the players. But the players are also prepared by the manager, and we often see, you know, Eriksen on the bench. We're not sure why that's happened. There was a period at the end of last season where Alderweireld just disappeared off the map. It wasn't that he was injured. We didn't know where he was. And that was something to do with his contract too. So... Look, ultimately, the manager pays the price for the players, but I do think that there's something in what a lot of journalists are saying, that the players were out Pochettino'd. There was a tiredness to the message.
Yeah, I think that's what happened. And look, we don't play for a team. Like, I can't relate to what it's like to have a manager who, as great as he is, just great on you to the point where you shut down and you just kind of go under this assumption, you know what, I'll be here after him, so I don't have to work as hard.
But one of the quotes from Miguel's piece in September was, that's just Pochettino. Shrug of the shoulders. And that kind of suggests there's a malaise in a club. And they have been a zombie club all, like, there was great, I think emotion carried them to the Champions League final. Never giving up. Strokes of luck, strokes of genius.
Incredible luck.
Strokes of genius in terms of Lucas Moura. There's no question about that. There was a lot of...
Stroke of genius, but also necessity. You know, Kane was hurt.
They were carried along. I suppose it was the perfect example of why cup football is so dramatically different from the league. But the 18 defeats across all competitions. But can I ask you this? When's the last time you enjoyed watching them? I'm not talking about put the Champions League in a box.
I haven't hated these Champions League matches against Red Star Belgrade.
I know, they've been like padding the numbers, the feel good. Red Star feel good Belgrade. But no, tell me like a game where you looked at them and you thought, oh, that's good play. They're playing nice.
Well, I mean, the second half against Ajax in the Champions League semifinal.
I know, but put the Champions League away. Put the Champions League away. League's your bread.
Other than
league's
that, Mrs. Lincoln.
No, league's your bread and butter. Like the
well, then I mean, all right. You know what? The last great league game. Maybe I'm missing one, but last season against Chelsea, that performance was so dominant when Son just owned Jorginho. It was such a dominant performance. It was such a great performance by Son.
When was that? January?
I think it was before the new year. So I think that
they were in Wembley.
I think it might have still been in 2018. Oh yeah, it was definitely in Wembley. It's not at the new stadium.
Think about that though. Come on.
Yeah, and I might be missing like some. Yeah, I don't know, but that's one that was to me the high point of last season.
Andrew,
within the league.
Ages ago.
Yeah, I know. No, yeah. Look, you're right.
I saw. I mean, Sheffield United. I'm watching them and I don't know what they're trying to do. The patterns of play just weren't there.
They've been outplayed by Sheffield United, Brighton, Newcastle. Like, yeah, we know. We know that there are major structural issues within the club. I just felt that maybe this is naive, but I can't separate myself from this feeling that he earned the right to see them out of it. Damn these players that got complacent and smug. Like, you know, I don't like seeing them rewarded. If we do find out in the coming days that they wanted him out. I love these players. They've done so many great things, but damn them for getting their way on this one. I hate that.
I mean, I guess all clubs are a symbiosis between manager and players. And if one part of that breaks down, it's usually the manager
of
that
course,
pays.
We say it all the time. Like you said earlier, you can't fire the players. I saw this from Mark Ogden. I'm reading directly from his article. He said, sources have told ESPN FC that Pochettino's methods began to grate with senior players, with one claiming privately that his demands on the training pitch would not be accepted by players at a, quote, super club, like Real Madrid, Manchester United, or Barcelona, because they were methods that would be accepted only by young players making their way in the game.
Wow.
And that is when Tottenham were at their best, when these players who are now aging players were young players.
And again, that goes back to the replenishment. But the replenishment...
It never happened.
It didn't. What was being replenished was the stadium. That's what happened.
It never happened. I had one more question for you before we kind of discuss what happens next to both Pochettino and the club. And this is one I'm having a hard time with, and maybe I need a non-Tottenham fan to answer this question. From the time Poch arrived to the time he left, has the term Spursy changed in any way, shape, or form?
I don't. This is how seriously I took Tottenham in those years. That when they would have a slip up and people would go, that's so Spursy.
Right.
I'm like, you don't know what you're talking about. I didn't use the term anymore. It was redundant to me because they were consistently good. And the slip-ups were just magnified by people who were in a kind of a Twitter football club turf war. And I didn't get involved in that. So it did change for me, yes.
Yeah, I want to agree with you, but I don't know. Because don't you feel like what is happening here has revitalized the term Spursy? Like, here we are. We thought Tottenham had reached this echelon. And, like, overnight, it's like Cinderella, like, turning back into the ugly stepsister or whatever it was that she did in the end of that movie. Like, it just happened immediately. It's like this was all just a dream, and now here we are, they're 14th in the table, and their manager's fired, and they're a disaster, and it's just like it all...
But you see, for Spurs, again, I suppose with a longer lens, I look at Tottenham. Tottenham Spursiness is hiring Christian Gross, who does the press conference, and in the middle of it, to the horror of Alan Sugar, he pulls out his train ticket and does this mad rambling about, this is the ticket I've taken and this is the ticket that all fans take to the stadium and I hope it's my ticket to success or something mad like that. And everyone's like, oh Jesus, that's Spursy. Juan de Ramos coming in and like, oh, he's the hot new manager. He does, and it just being absolutely terrible.
Hey, he won a trophy.
Well, okay. Well, yeah, all right, okay. But ultimately, it failed.
No, but you're right. That right there is the proof of why winning a trophy is not like what did that mean for Juan de Ramos's legacy as Tottenham's manager, as opposed to what Mauricio Pochettino's legacy
would be. All right. Also, Lasagna Gate. That's so Spursy. You know, you're on the brink of the Champions League.
Oh, mass poisoning.
All you've got to do is beat West Ham. Although West Ham were good that year under House of Cards. But you just got to beat them.
Right.
Or get a good result. And you get beaten, what, 3-1 or something?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And what's the reason? Mass food poisoning.
Right.
A poisoned lasagna. I mean, that was Spursy to me. So
that's so sad. So what's next now?
Your little face, though, guys. I gotta bring you behind the curtain here. The deflation, because I know this man. I've looked into his eyes now for the last 5 years doing this podcast. I know when he's just like utterly drained and deflated by something.
So what happens next here? For Pochettino, is this like Solskjaer gets the domino effect? Is Solskjaer loses his job tomorrow? Pochettino's at United.
I don't know.
Is it Real Madrid decide we're done with Zidane?
I think it might be Spain. I think it might be Spain because does he want to go into a situation at Manchester United where you've got a power broker like Ed Woodward, who again will be Prince of the Purse? He will be... I wonder, does he want it? I thought for a while that that's the fit. It's a total rebuild at United. Now, is that attractive for a manager like Maurizio Pochettino at this stage in his career? Is he surely not? So look at what he did in Spain. Look at what he did with Southampton, right? Mm-hmm. And look at what he's done with Spurs in terms of elevating clubs. Is it not now the moment for him to walk into a Real Madrid
100%.
Or a Barcelona job, not a fixer-upper? Sorry, United, you are a massive club. You are not a massive club on the field right now. And I'm wondering if it's... I mean, what about Valverde?
Well, here's the thing. Hold on for a sec with Valverde. Pochettino has said before, because of his ties and his intense loyalty with Espanyol, he will never manage Barcelona.
Okay, so but never in football is...
I'm taking them out of the equation. I really believe him.
Never,
I really do.
Never, okay.
So then what are we talking about if we're talking about Spain? We're talking about really one club in Real Madrid. Maybe Atletico, but I don't see any reason why they would be making a managerial change anytime soon. So if that's the case, you're talking about one club with Real Madrid being on the table in Spain. The other one I'd be looking at, look, he played, you know, he made 70 appearances at PSG. If anything were to go awry there...
For Tuchel.
I don't see why that would happen. You know, their place, like, you know, they seem to be doing fine under Tuchel lately, so
yeah. But again, you know, the demands of that club, you could be right.
So, but like, so really, you know, what are even the options?
Not many,
for
really.
Pochettino, unless he's willing to take, like you said, a fixer-upper position or a job that we may view as beneath him.
I suppose when you paint it like that, then United come back into the frame.
Right.
They do come back into the frame. Again, I can't remember who tweeted this. They said, is the situation with Mourinho and United, where Mourinho was supposed to be Man United manager when David Moyes got it. Mm-hmm. And he would have been kind of in the sweet spot of his powers, but United waited and probably appointed him too late. Is it a case that United are in a state of just disrepair now that it wouldn't be right to put Pochettino into that scenario? It wouldn't be the fit it was when maybe... Right at that moment, remember when they finished second under Mourinho? And they weren't great, but they had a bit of something.
Right, it felt like a hollow second.
It did feel like a hollow second, but they were at least in the conversation right there. Maybe that was the time.
And look, they did win, what was it, a League Cup.
And a Europa League. Maybe that was the moment that you bring in a manager like Pochettino. Maybe it's moved on too much for United now. But like, we hold him in the esteem where... Maybe we hold him in such a esteem that we've limited the clubs. What about Bayern Munich? Is that one?
Maybe.
Would he want that?
Sure.
Again, a lot of guys above him with a lot of power, you know, huge power brokers in the club.
I wonder if Bayern would look at that and say, we just beat that guy 7-2. I don't know that we want him here.
Maybe. I don't know.
But yeah, I mean, look, I hold him in that echelon of manager that he could handle being at a club like that. Like I said, the guy just finished third in manager of the year. Not that that means everything, but he's an elite level manager.
There's right.
With what he's done at this club and the way he, like, you know, I joked about it in our rap battle, but like he made Kieran Trippier England's right back. Like he revitalized Danny Rose's career. You know, there's players that we just really, I don't like guys. Look what he turned Harry Kane into. You know, he got a lot of guys really, really rich.
He built something there. He definitely built something there.
Yeah. And then I guess the other side of that is, what does it mean for Tottenham? Where do they turn now for their next manager?
Well, if it was yesterday and you read some of the newspapers who were foretelling that something might happen, specifically The Independent, they talked about Julian Nagelsmann mm-hmm. at Leipzig, but I'm not sure he wants to move. There was a lot of talk about, who else was in the frame? Allegri. And now what we are learning from the interwebs, specifically from Sky Sports, where he works currently,
yeah,
that Spurs are locked in negotiations, their words, not mine, with Jose Mourinho.
This is unbelievable.
Which I do not... First of all, put the affiliations with Chelsea aside. Or not the affiliate. it's a clear affiliation between Mourinho and Chelsea, but put the animosity aside between the two clubs for a second and think about what he is as a manager, his values as a manager. This would be the anti-Poch. It would be antithetical to everything that Spurs have built up as their lore. What's the lore of Spurs? Excitement.
Free-flowing.
Right.
Attack-minded.
Wingers sometimes. Traditionally goal scorers, Jimmy Greaves, Harry Kane, Gary Lineker, Paul Gascoigne in the middle of the park. This is not Mourinho. This is not what he will do. He will come in and the first thing he will think about is, oh God, what do we do if we lose the ball? And that will be a short-term fix. Talk about cycles. 3 years. Isn't that what he does? First season comes close. Second season wins. Third season, toxicity and explosion. You can't be happy about this. You can't.
No, he would not be. He would not be on my radar. I just can't help but like think of how many shows we sat here and did at the end of his time with both Chelsea and then again with Manchester United, where we just week after week, the circus, the train wreck, you know, the idea, you know, hearing from players that once loved him that talked about how like the game is passing him by, that things are changing, that players respond differently. I mean, look, I could talk myself into it and say, oh, well, maybe this time away from the game, this time away from management, he's had a chance for
introspection. No, but we've had a window. We've had a window every week on Sky where he has shown us. Like, look at the way he talks about Frank Lampard's team. He talks about the young players, right? And his worries about the young players and how they need to be more, you know, he worries about their defence. And like, he is singularly minded towards stopping other people playing rather than playing himself. Now, he'll have senior pros. He will have the kind of players he wants in terms of defensively. I've no question there. And my worry would be he'll sign a load of older guys. This team will change because we know what he likes. He likes guys who are experienced.
Right.
And that is not the DNA of what Spurs have been.
By the way, the DNA of Spurs doesn't even involve buying players, period. No. Like, I mean, what kind of relationship is Jose Mourinho going to have with Daniel Levy? You talk about toxicity. There's going to be a friction between those two. Mourinho, even when he gets what he wants, he's not happy. Remember all the center backs that he's buying for Manchester United? And then what happens at the very next transfer window? He's complaining about not being able to buy a new center back because the ones he bought failed. To me, it's a bad idea. If I had my pick of anyone, I don't know that it's on the table.
Oh, I know.
I can't help but have been really impressed from Erik ten Hag of Ajax.
Right.
I think the way, you know, just watching them, watching the way he has brought along young players, which again is part of the Tottenham DNA.
And part of the Ajax DNA.
Right. Well, and how many times have Tottenham gone digging into Ajax for their talent?
Correct.
Watching, you know, the way he's played, performed in the Champions League, how they've done domestically, I just think he would seamlessly fit with what it is Tottenham do.
And boy, would it be good to watch, we
right.
expect.
So, you know, he would be my number one choice. I've seen a lot of Spurs fans sort of echo that sentiment, along with Max Allegri, whose name, to the best of my knowledge, is not even being brought up as a possibility.
Can I ask you about
something? It seems like it's Jose or bust. By the time you listen to this, he may be their manager.
They're not going to do the U.S. men's national team and interview like one person. Or who was? No, it wasn't them that did it. Who was it that interviewed just some club, talked to one manager, and that was it?
Well, remember,
Why am I blanking on this? We're not that far removed
from the U.S. When they were going for their new manager opening, installing all of the restrictions that basically weeded out like 90% of legitimate candidates. Like Tata Martino couldn't have been considered because of like certain restrictions put around.
I'm going to apologize to one of our listeners who tweeted this very early after the announcement, and I want to gauge your thoughts on it. There is a young manager who is English who has developed a team from the Championship.
I know what you're going to say.
Who developed him from League One, excuse me, and has been part of it and plays football in a way that we all love and has been, I wouldn't say he's been looking for a move, I don't know that he has, but certainly there's a feeling he may have been looked over for a couple of roles. Eddie Howe, What would your thoughts be? You should interview him, I think.
Yeah, look, if you're talking about managers within the league he would be – like, who are the managers that we've been most impressed with? Well, you'd have to probably look at guys who have overachieved with clubs that are punching, you know, beyond their weight. So the fact that Bournemouth have remained a viable EPL side for this long, of course you have to look at Eddie Howe. Burnley, but no, I don't want Sean Dyche as Tottenham's manager. I just don't think that that's
– Oh, no, that's not
right.
It's not happening.
He's, yeah, so – You know, like,
although stylistically, how much different is he from? He's.
I mean, am I crazy
from Mourinho?
Am I crazy for even suggesting Brendan Rodgers or like what Rafa Benitez was doing at Newcastle? And now, I mean, he'd come back
if Rodgers secretly. If Rodgers has the ego that we kind of get an inkling of every now and again in his proclamations. Like, it's submerged under all this management speak. If Rodgers has that ego, Andrew, he would love a shot at the Spurs job.
I'm sure.
And he will be upset that he really can't go now. I don't think he can.
Last bit here. Two final things. For one, you and some other people also kind of asked me about to be nostalgic and relive my favorite moments of this era for Pochettino. I do have three here. Can I go through them very quickly?
No, I want to hear them. Absolutely.
Yeah. My number three, November 1st, 2017, the Champions League, Tottenham 3, Real Madrid 1, the defending champions, European champions, Real Madrid, going into Wembley after Spurs had drew with them 2-2 back at the Bernabeu, and Tottenham just played so well.
Eriksen's played in here for Spurs. It's Trey! The swiftest of counterattacks. It's not all about Kane. When you've got the Dane.
God, it was just one of those nights where it just felt like all of this, everything Pochettino is doing here, it's all crystallizing, and we really are a great club, like a real European team to be reckoned with.
Remember the pep talk I gave you when that draw was made? You were like, oh no, it's Real Madrid and Borussia Dortmund, oh my God. And what happened?
They won the group.
I told you. Get in there. This is what it's about,
you're
being
right.
In the Champions League.
No, the glamour ties. You're right. Next one, JJ, number two for me, April 20th, 2017, the final North London derby at White Hart Lane.
And down goes Kane. And Michael Oliver has given Spurs the penalty. He does. He scored in five in a row in the Premier League against Arsenal.
Harry Kane. Always scoring against Arsenal. What a day that was. It was just the pressure.
Was that,
of that
the one
game,
where he bent it in at the post?
Well, there was one that it was a penalty.
Oh, that was the penalty.
Put right after Dele Alli had scored. Then Tottenham, they had all the momentum. The crowd was just at a full throat. And then Kane drew a penalty, converted the penalty. It was just such a great day to be a Tottenham fan because not only did they beat Arsenal that day, but it was the day that also clinched Tottenham finishing above Arsenal for the first time in God knows how long.
So what's your number one?
So number one.
I ask you, so I hate interrupting you. I hate doing this. Do you want the news from the interwebs now, or do you want to play your moment?
Is it done? Let me play my number one first.
Okay.
Before.
This is happening.
Before my life changes.
Live on the podcast.
Good Christ. I feel terrible not having anything from Manchester City. I just kind of grouped the whole Champions League run of last year together, but like how can you go with anything other than this?
Comes to Dele Alli, through to Lucas Moura! Lucas Moura has fired Spurs through to Madrid to the Champions League final!
That's right, May 8th, 2019, and what now kind of has to be looked upon as the last great night of the Pochettino dynasty. God, these were fun years. Definitely the most fun I've ever had as a soccer fan has been supporting this club under this manager.
Oh.
No question about it.
And I'll tell you, it was... Your joy was visible through these years. It was great for you, man. And here we go. Fabrizio Romano of Sky Sports. Jose Mourinho is coming back.
Oh,
confirmed.
God. Oh, my God.
Tottenham, confirmed Tottenham job. Daniel Levy decision and the situation right now. So he's posted a link to his Instagram. I'm not going to touch it. I'm going to go back a bit.
This is...
Bleacher Report Football. Verified account. Tottenham and Jose Mourinho have reached an agreement for him to become the club's next manager, according to Fabrizio Romano. So the fact that they're tweeting this out, going with it, wow.
Look, you only fire a manager like Mauricio Pochettino if you think you have somebody of equal or better status who can get the job done.
Correct.
It's up to each individual Tottenham fan out there to decide on their own whether or not they feel like this move achieves that. I do not. I feel like this is Daniel Levy, whether you want to call it star hunting. If maybe he thought this would appease what would surely be an angry fan base after having just somewhat unceremoniously fired a club legend, I think that's a total miscalculation. Mm. I think there's just been too much bad and too much negativity and too much circus atmosphere around Jose Mourinho to think that he can come in and fix what's wrong with this club right now.
But also, I think a lot of what did we say prior to his appointment at Man United, and probably lazy analysis from me, guaranteed winner, going to win your trophies, but ultimately he'll be out after 3 years in a blaze of recriminations and I refuse to speak. I cannot comment.
I refer,
all this kind of nonsense that he does in press conferences where he won't one-word answers and all this stuff. I don't think this is good at all. And I don't think he's a guaranteed winner anymore, which is, why is he there then?
I mean, before Pochettino, there was obviously the brief Tim Sherwood era, but before that was AVB, who was, you know, a Jose Mourinho underling.
Yeah.
And look, it wasn't a bad moment in Spurs history. They came very close to qualifying for a Champions League. But let's look back on what that was. And I'm not saying that AVB and Mourinho are the same, but in terms of style, look, Gareth Bale put those Tottenham teams on his back. I don't actually know how great Tottenham was. And if you look at some of the players that they had then, there were it was a team that probably should have been better than they were. Is it going to be a recession back into that kind of style? Just defensive-minded and hope to eke out 1-0s? I don't know if you can do that right now. I feel like between the way Liverpool play and Manchester City play and what Chelsea are building right now, if you're trying to just go to those places and get yourself 0-0s and 1-0s, it's not going to happen. Look, I hope to be wrong. And Jose Mourinho has this philosophy of give me 2 years. Maybe this is early enough in year one where this will count. And then next season, after having a window to work with and buy players, that will be the year where they can really kick on and do something. But man, that's just, boy, it's not what I would have done
for a club.
I can't believe they're firing Mauricio Pochettino for Jose Mourinho. This is the thought of Mourinho now manning the Tottenham sideline. This is wild.
You know what I'm going to do for you?
What club is this?
You know what I'm going to do for you right now? Let's check Sky Sports News. All right? Because if they're corroborating all this. No, they're sticking with their one from 2 hours ago that representatives are locked in talks. Locked in negotiations.
My guess is by the time people listen to this, it will be done. It feels like there's this sense of inevitability over it. I don't want to go too much longer on this. Non-Tottenham fans may be reaching their end.
A lot of non-Tottenham fans, though, chimed in and wanted to know how you're doing.
And so this wasn't
just a football discussion.
You're right. This wasn't just some firing. This was a pretty landmark moment in this season so far. My last bit on this, I got a tweet earlier today from @apocalypto_doctor. He said, can you help a fella out who only began to follow Tottenham in November of 2015? I want to follow a club that plays good ball and does not buy whatever they want. I suppose I still have an attachment to some of these players. Is it enough? Not enough to tolerate Mourinho. What I would say to him is, I feel your pain. I understand that Pochettino had established a connection with this fan base. However, the club persists. No one man is bigger than the club. No one man is bigger than the shirt.
It's about the badge and the supporters, because players and managers come and go.
That's right. And it's a part of community. And, you know, it's a part of other Tottenham fans. Like, this is what persists in these moments. Like you said, players, managers, they come and go. But, you know, never shun the jersey. Never shun the team.
No.
Never shun the traditions.
Can I make a deal with the devil? Well, it's obviously not a real deal.
Yeah.
If I were to offer you Mourinho or go back to somebody who brought some joy, what would you do? It's Mourinho or...
And you mean you've made your name as a wheeler and dealer. There's not been much wheeling and dealing.
No, I'm not a wheeler and dealer.
No, off. Oh, no, don't mean it like that. Don't mean it like that.
No, I've got a name as a dealer. Don't say that. I'm a football manager.
No, Harry, no, no. The grovelling.
Yeah.
Harry, no.
But he was laughing going into it. Oh, you've made your name as a wheeler and dealer. Now, off. You would have Harry back in a heartbeat over Mourinho.
No, I don't think I would.
Over Mourinho?
What is Harry Redknapp doing?
I'm with Sandra. Down at the beach.
I'll take my chances.
All right.
And we'll see.
Okay.
This is wild. Absolutely wild.
When's the last time we had all this breaking news on a podcast? Probably when Suarez bit someone. Remember that?
Oh, you mean during a podcast?
During it.
Yeah. This is unbelievable. Should we take a quick break?
Let's
come
do
back.
That.
We'll talk a little bit of U.S. soccer and who knows what other news will have come out in the time since. Don't go anywhere.
Zardes scores again. That'll settle it. Two for him, four for the USA. The points are in the bag. And revenge is served cold by Greg Berhalter's side.
That's right, Greg Berhalter still alive.
Serving up a steaming cold plate of revenge.
That's right. As we sit here right now, the U.S. are leading Cuba 3-0 at the half.
We're still getting messages, though, about you. Gooner Brian. A gooner? Seriously, all kidding aside, is Andrew okay?
I mean,
people think I've posted a little video to @SoccerPod on Twitter just to reassure people that you're okay.
I'm sure it wasn't humiliating at all.
I have this vision of you because for the last 5 minutes since we went on the break from the first segment, you've been just shaking your head and going,
Mourinho.
So my worry is you're in some kind of a psychotic moment.
Okay.
So when Amanda goes to the store on Saturday and leaves you with the kids, she'll return. You'll be in the corner with like a sweaty bandana on your head and a bottle of Jack Daniels saying, Mourinho. Why Mourinho? And the kids will be covered in their own poop because you've let them run wild.
So like Lord of the Flies will break out inside of my house.
Kind of.
Every man for himself.
Anyway, let's focus on the U.S. now. Take your mind off it.
It's just so...
Stop.
It's just so weird.
Let's like, talk about our nation. Come on.
Yes, the U.S. do respond. They defeat Canada. This feels so...
I
don't want to talk about any of this.
No,
right
come
now.
On. We're doing it. Come on.
4-1.
Currently winning 3-0 at halftime against Cuba.
So I guess from where people were, like the depths that people were reaching after the Canada loss a month ago, to where we are now, look, you have to be feeling better. I'm not going to sit here and say that it was a masterclass that the U.S. put out against Canada, but I'm also going to say that, you know, some people need to ease up a little bit because it's still, even after a 4-1 win against Canada the other day, you know, there was still such negativity about the performance, about the way the U.S. looked. And like I said, it wasn't a thing of beauty, but like we were the same people sitting here a month ago saying, you know what, maybe Canada are better than we give them credit for. We're in this moment of rebuilding. And so like for all of you who want to be like that, I say take your electric shock. It's a 4-1 win. Like who are we right now? All right. 4-1 wins are not just being thrown around left and right for this team. So like take it. It wasn't a bad performance. Like certain guys are starting to play better. There's two guys I wanted to mention to you that I'm now coming around on. Who have kind of been like, you know, MLS stalwarts that are they actually good players or are they what we classify JJ as just guys? Like I actually think that Jordan Morris is a legitimately good player. And if he's starting or if he's playing meaningful minutes for the U.S., I'm fine with that. Like,
look, he gives everything. He scores crucial goals. He sets them up as we've seen. He is a hard-working, like I said, he really does embody so much of what Kevin Kilbane had for Ireland, or how I remember it. He works hard, he's decent technically, and he's going to give you everything. I agree. I know the next guy you're going to talk about.
Sebastian Legette.
Which you've loved him.
I've been high on him for a long time, and unfortunately injuries have affected him at just the wrong moments. And so now, you know, getting, I wouldn't say an extended look, but just... I don't know. I feel like it's very rare when I watch him play for the U.S. and I come away from it thinking, no, that guy can't play. I never feel that way about him. I know he shanked one shot in the Canada game where he maybe had a chance and could have, at least he would have liked him to put it on target, but I don't know.
He's neat, he's tidy, he's technically good, he moves the ball well, he links up play well. What's not to like?
Yeah.
Can I ask you something, though?
Sure.
Like, just general play, what you saw with your eyes, outside of the goals. Now, possession, believe me, is a metric that can be unhelpful. It doesn't always tell the full story. But the US were at home. Canada had 64%. Mm-hmm. That is a huge number. It's massive. They had 520 passes, almost twice as many as we had. Mm-hmm. What they didn't have was a cutting edge. Mm-hmm. The manager, Herdman, did a few things that I was kind of curious about, particularly the position of Alphonso Davies.
Totally agree.
But that worries me and it concerns me. And
well, can I address the possession thing for a moment? I think the stat is slightly skewed because the U.S. scored so early. Jordan Morris scored in the second minute, and then they got a second one in the 23rd minute.
But Canada throughout the game.
I think the U.S., once you go up 2-0, and then it was, look, it's 3-0 in the 34th, the U.S. aren't going to be, like, I think they're content to let Canada.
I don't think they go. I don't think Berhalter either got the tactics right in terms of the press. We pressed more for sure. We won more tackles than we did in Toronto for sure. But there was too many times when I saw Scott Arfield on the ball, Andrew, in a kind of in the pivot position, picking passes, moving the ball, trying to create chances. The problem was they were very blunt, and we were actually. I thought Tim Ream had a very good game. I thought we actually won the kind of 50-50 balls. We intercepted a lot of stuff in the box. But I'm looking for this coherent Berhalter style, and I'm not seeing it. And tonight, you know, we're playing against Cuba on a pretty awful field. It's about as bad a field as I've ever seen. And it's just, the ball is bouncing around, bobbling everywhere. It's a high school field. Looks like there's sand covering certain divots from what was probably the shot put competition, seeing as there's...
You are so arrogant. Your arrogance knows no bounds.
No, but your good friend, Arthur Cogan, who is a good barometer of US fans, I feel, are probably more, I won't say educated, but a more...
No, he's a great follower. I saw the video he tweeted.
He's not happy.
No, I saw that.
And he says it doesn't matter what kind of surface or doesn't matter what team you're playing against, this kind of play is not good enough. And I would agree with him as well, but just focus on the Canada game. There was a lot of play there where I thought, we're miles off Canada in terms of just the techniques of possession and patterns of play. Not good. I'm sorry. I hate to be the one at the party who says there's a rat in the sausages or the wine isn't good, but that 4-1 was didn't impress me.
I mean, yes, I don't know. I guess I understand that. You're looking for them to truly dominate a game and...
Yeah, just take a game by the scruff of the neck, be in control, the tempo. Well, look, we don't do that. And you know what? I've said for years...
But was there any moment in that Canada game where you felt like the U.S. were under any real threat?
No,
like, even
I've
with
never,
Canada controlling 64% possession, did you really feel that way at any point?
I thought Canada's final pass was what let them down. Their inability to kind of break through the lines. Now, we played possibly with a deeper, with a lower block and we're looking to play on the break. Maybe that was the plan. I don't know.
Oh, or maybe we defended well. I mean, John Brooks and Aaron Long.
I know, but we're at home.
Well, by the way, that's another thing to talk about.
We're not really at home.
Whoa, I mean...
The crowd.
And look, I know it was a combination of rain and not really a all that glamorous fixture and in a tournament that I don't know if people care all that much about it. Certain star players, Pulisic not playing.
But that game was built up. It was the Greg inning. You know, something had to happen in it.
You're
we
right.
We needed
a
win.
It was disappointing to see that. There was no atmosphere in that place.
No. And, you know,
this team is going to have to reprove itself to this fan base before the fan base comes flocking back to them.
I know, which is...
I know that's hard for someone who comes from, like, Ireland or a soccer nation.
When Ireland have been bad, which has been for the last 5 or 6 years, you know, a lot of fans don't turn up at the Aviva for games against even qualifiers, you know. But there's still more of an atmosphere. We still fill the ground better than what Orlando. I mean, Orlando's 25,000, Andrew. For what should be like a derby game between Canada against Canada, a grudge match. I mean, the American Outlaws filled behind one goal and made it look good. The other, behind the other goal was just...
No, it wasn't. And the second level, yeah, it was
disappointing.
It wasn't pretty. Yeah, it was disappointing. Yeah, it was I don't know. It was a game that they just need wins right now. Berhalter needs wins. Certain players need to rebuild their confidence. We need to find out what our center back partnership would be. And if it turns out to be Aaron Long and John Brooks, then I'm okay with that. This is still all part of this rebuilding process. It's not going to be – I don't know when I feel like we can say, okay, now is the time where we need to start coming up with some pretty wins against decent competition. But I don't think that I'm there yet. I understand, you know, I'm more looking at certain moments. Like moments of, you know, Weston McKennie hitting Sergiño Dest in space. Dest, with a great opportunity on net, just kind of puts it a little bit wide. He was disappointed in himself afterwards. He said, when I get that chance again, I'm going to score. So little things like that. We're starting to just, like, haven't played with each other.
I agree with you. I like some of the players that we have. I thought Dest was good as well. But, you know, I just want more from...
I know. Everybody wants more. No one's ever happy. No one's ever satisfied. They're going to hoist a World Cup. No one was happy with Jill Ellis as she's celebrating winning a World Cup for the second time. No one... I don't know what we want.
Ted Cruz says he's...
Who?
Ooh, Ted Cruz... Oh, I can't read that.
The senator?
I was reading the handle. It's a rude handle. CJ says, tell him that we are praying for him. Although Ted Cruz would pray for you, I would imagine.
People are very nice.
They are very nice.
I've got to say.
A lot of nice things being said about you. You should feel good in this...
I just never expected it today. I don't know.
It's literally creeping into this podcast to the point where we can't talk about other topics.
No, I really don't care about
it. Is there anything else to be said for the U.S. men's national team?
I'll be honest, I don't really have much.
No, I don't think so either. Tonight they're going to, I suppose cruise. It's very hard to cruise on that field. Andrew, shock me. Ted Cruz on that field. Can you shock me? I'm making comments about the field. I'm being arrogant as a U.S. soccer fan.
You are everything that's wrong with this country.
All right.
I did want to ask you about Ireland. And there's one other thing I wanted to mention to you. What a complete jerk you are.
Boy.
So I went on Twitter. I don't know. I wasn't very active on social media yesterday.
No.
So I went on Twitter this morning. And you know how sometimes it'll show you like other random tweets from like 23 hours
ago. Tweets you might have missed.
Right. And I see one from the official show account that says, I don't remember exactly what it said, but it was something to the effect of, by the way, for those wondering, not a peep from Andrew.
Nothing.
I haven't heard anything from him, any sort of condolences.
No, not even a good look beforehand, nor a hard look afterwards.
But what did I...
Hours later, you sent me a text. Hours!
I am somebody who, after a horrible loss... I don't want to hear from anyone. I like the dust to settle.
We didn't lose, by the way. We always draw 1-1.
But I mean, in spirit,
it was
moral
victory, if anything.
But I'm saying, what we're talking about is the Ireland game.
Ireland Denmark.
We should say that.
Ireland Denmark. If Ireland had won that game, they qualified automatically. They didn't because we always draw. And now we go into this mad jumble that is the. Nations League.
So I thought I sent you such a nice text. I allowed the dust to settle, whatever emotions you were feeling. You know, I sent you a text message later that night that said, you know, if you need to take your mind off of what was a tough result today, let me suggest this new documentary that came out on Netflix that I think you'll really like. I thought it was heartfelt. I put thought into it. I really thought I was doing a nice thing. And then to see that, I felt like it was such a stab in the back.
But Andrew,
every time I think our friendship has reached
Andrew,
new heights,
you send it at 10:10
right,
at night.
I need the dust settled.
9:51. I want you to jump in straight away. Think of all the hours we've spent here, late train D trains back at 1 a.m. in the morning to the hood. All the hours, the sweat, the blood, watching the U.S. play Curacao.
Right.
All I wanted was just a little bit of love for my homeland. That's
and I
all.
Gave you one.
I
just didn't realize that there were time constraints on when that love needed to be given.
Yeah, it's like if
you're a very complicated person.
It's like when you're dating a girl and like it's over a period of months and you finally just say, I love you. There can be no gap. It's the same with football. I need condolences immediately.
Like, to me, it's like you went out on a date with a girl and you're hoping that she texts you that night after the date, and she doesn't. So you think, oh, to hell with her. But then instead she sends you a text message the next morning to say how much fun you had, but you've already written her off.
Well, I haven't done that before.
How do you sustain any relationships?
I don't know. The one I'm in right now, I'm putting pressure on for sure. But
you're talking about with me or with your actual girlfriend?
Both. You're kind of the same.
I will say this. I wanted to ask you, the Ireland-Denmark rivalry, it yes. has to be one of the most
bitter
and out of nowhere. I'm trying to think of other random-ass rivalries.
Yeah, I don't know how this one happened. We just kept
getting... You play them all the time.
And they're in their English, they just tell us how much they think we're boring and bad and stupid. Ken Early on Second Captains did... I wish I'd come up with this analogy. He goes, we're like, there's a barbecue. Denmark are having a barbecue and Ireland are invited to it. And they're like, oh no, we don't want you here. And like, we get drunk and we trash the place. And they're like having intellectual conversations while we're crushing
just
beers.
Like buffooning.
Buffooning,
out in the corner.
Right. Like, they don't think we're part of the upper echelon, you know? Peter Schmeichel in the tunnel said to the Swiss players, you play when the Swiss were beaten by Denmark 1-0. Uh-huh. He said, you guys played an unbelievable game. Don't worry, you'll beat Ireland. They're so, so bad. Like, these mother aren't afraid to just come out and tell you. There's none of the diplomacy. Nothing. They tell us we're crap. And then they beat us.
It's such a weird rivalry.
It emerged from nowhere.
Why do you play them so much?
Well, first of all, we had them in the playoff that they beat us 5-1 over the two legs in. Mm. And then the Nations League happened. And lo and behold, we had them in that. And then we have this other qualifying. And we have them in that. By the way, the qualifying, it's the funniest rivalry ever. By the way, the qualifying is so terrible. So in our group, the top two go into the finals, so that's Switzerland and the Danes.
Right.
Andrew, ourselves and Georgia and Gibraltar are the teams that make up the group. Only Gibraltar are not still in this thing. Like, it's never ending. It's like the line in the Hotel California. Relax, said the nightman. You are programmed to receive. You can check out anytime you like, but you can never leave. Like, it's never over. By the way, here's the confirmed playoffs from Dale Johnson of ESPN, who's the only man on planet Earth who understands this qualifying process. Iceland will play Hungary or Romania. Bulgaria or Israel will play Israel or Hungary. Don't know how that works. Don't care. B, Bosnia and Herzegovina will play Northern Ireland. Slovakia will play the Republic of Ireland. So we play that game, we win, we go into a we go into a final. C, Scotland versus Bulgaria, Israel, Romania or Hungary. Norway versus Serbia. That's in pot C. And pot D, Georgia versus Belarus. North Macedonia versus Kosovo.
What?
Yeah, they're still in it.
Pardon my ignorance here.
Nobody goes out. You can never leave.
So
you'll be qualifying forever.
Should Ireland defeat Slovakia, who will they then play? Is that known?
The winner of Bosnia and...
this is unbelievable.
The winner of Bosnia and Northern Ireland. So we could have an...
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and that game, that final would be at Windsor Park.
Ireland versus Northern Ireland. To qualify for the European Championship.
Literally the biggest game since we played them in 1993. Oh. By the way, look, the temperature is much better. Our country's moved on. That will still be...
They'll reheat that quickly, though.
That'd be nasty.
Oh, my God. Real quick, before we close out this podcast, one other note. I don't have much else to say about European Championship qualifying, although I do want to say one thing. I want to give a little bit of credit to Italy. I know they weren't in the world's most difficult group. It's Italy and Finland that wind up going through. But in 10 qualifying matches, Italy win all 10, scored 37 goals, only allowed 4. Only Belgium were more impressive in qualification. Italy, kind of like the Netherlands, are a team that a lot of the world has been sort of down on over the most recent cycle or cycles. And, you know, I think there's been a little bit of a transition period that has gone on there. And I can't help but wonder, Italy are never going to be down for long.
No.
And you know, I never know exactly what to make out of qualification, but 10 wins from 10 games with that sort of goal differential over the course of those games, you know, if Italy were still down, yeah, sure, they would have gotten through, but I don't think it would have been quite as impressive as it is. So I wonder if maybe whatever transition was going on, maybe it's kind of happened, and maybe Italy, to a certain extent, are back and are to be considered some sort of threat when this tournament actually happens.
Speaking of back, the Netherlands are back at a major tournament for the first time since 2014. Unconvincing 0-0 at the aforementioned Windsor Park, Belfast, but still. By the way, Northern Ireland missed a penalty. Now, they were dominated by the Dutch, but they still missed a penalty. Michael O'Neill, the Northern Ireland manager, is now manager of Stoke, but he will be manager in March for the playoff against Bosnia. He says the double jobbing will be easy.
Yeah, it's certainly not hard in the video game.
Wales. Wales are back at the European Championships. 2-0 win over Hungary. Juventus's Aaron Ramsey with both goals. This is interesting. Wales beat Azerbaijan 2-0 at the weekend, and a terrorist chant by the Welsh fans about Gareth Bale drew a lot of media attention in Spain. Wales Golf Madrid, they're singing, which is kind of alluding to what Predrag Mijatovic at Real Madrid snidely suggested was maybe the order of priority for Gareth Bale. So this was discussed on football shows on TV. Marca, of course. This is the kind of stuff they love. And then Bale compounded things tonight by holding a Welsh flag in Cardiff saying, "Well, Wales, Golf, Madrid, in that order." And Marca had their article up very quickly. So it's kind of funny. He doesn't give a damn now at this point. Yeah. He's collecting checks, playing brilliant for Wales, doesn't really play for Real Madrid.
Let's see, JJ, before we get out, a very super quick what to watch for. Premier League this Saturday, well, they get right back at it.
Yeah, and how? And how?
Tottenham go to East London to take on West Ham Saturday, 7:30 a.m. I hate the 7:30 a.m. game because I just know, like, if you lose that, like, that means your whole weekend is ruined.
Right.
There's no rest. There's no, like, brief period before the game where you're like, okay, let's go. Like, it's like you wake up and you are, it's 9 o'clock in the morning and you're angry on Saturday, and that's it.
What if Mourinho's sat there at the London Stadium?
I can't even picture this.
Talking about a remontada. I don't know, man.
I hope to be wrong.
And this is one where, because we've got, obviously, we've got connections to West Ham fans, having had them on supporters groups on this podcast.
Yeah, one of my favorite in the clubs that we've done.
Yeah, that was excellent.
Yeah.
So I'm following their accounts. They are revved up because they have a manager who was, honestly, if someone was going to go in this period, it would have been Manuel Pellegrini. I would have expected him to get the sack because they've been wretched. Now, they've got injuries. They've got to get up for this. Spurs have to be up for this. If there's nobody sat in the dugout, if there's nobody there, they've got to do the no manager bounce.
Man.
What a game to come into.
And then Saturday at 12:30, your game of the weekend, Manchester City and Chelsea. Chelsea seemingly on the rise. Manchester City, I don't really know what to think of them right now. They're kind of in a bit of a dark place. Coming to grips with the new reality that they are probably not top dogs in this league.
Wow, okay. Continuing your theme of Liverpool being champions for a third time this season. City obviously struggling with injuries. Chelsea came up over the international break with something a little bit fun, which I want to quickly talk about before we get out. Ill-discipline. Did you see this? This is the range of fines that players can accrue at Chelsea. So you can get £500 sterling if you're late for team meetings. 1,000 if your phone rings during team meal or meeting. 1,000 reporting in wrong attire for travel match days. Okay, so 1,000, it's not that much. Late into the gym for pre-activation is 1,000. 5,000 for not travelling back on the team coach without 48 hours notice. 5,000 for a refusal / not turning up at corporate / community events. 10,000 for not reporting an illness or an injury 90 minutes before training. And 20 grand. 20 grand for if you're late for the start of training. So there we go. One last thing. I promise this is the last thing. Saturday, 3 p.m. Eastern, Copa Libertadores final. Brazil versus Argentina Flamengo versus River Plate. Flamengo returned to the final, Andrew, for the first time in 38 years.
Wow.
After battering fellow Brazilians Grêmio 6-1 in their semi-final, and River dispensed of Boca 2-1 over their two-legged semi-final, which was probably 180 minutes of the worst football I have ever watched. So I'm hoping the clash of cultures will be a good game, will prove a good game for this final. Previous meetings, 24th of May 2018 in the Copa Libertadores, River Plate 0, Flamengo 0. 1st of March 2018, Flamengo 2, River Plate 2. So hoping for that kind of game in this final. Gabriel Barbosa for Flamengo is the top scorer going into this game in the Copa Libertadores on loan from Inter Milan. He's got 7 goals. That game could be tasty, but I'm sick of hyping up these games in the Libertadores.
Only to be disappointed.
Yeah, to be honest with you. Yeah.
Well, there you go, man. That is this podcast, this emergency podcast. We weren't planning on being here tonight. This was supposed to be a Wednesday pod, but things have happened, as they tend to do in this sport. I'm still in a state of shock. I'm going to go home now and just go on Twitter and just scroll Twitter for the next 24 hours, basically.
You should jump on the account and respond to some of the nice messages.
Yeah, you're right. I definitely should do that because people have been very nice. And what I would say to Tottenham fans is, like, I'm sure I've said a lot of things on this podcast that people, Tottenham fans, may agree with. They may hate me for. They may think it was asinine. I would say in these moments, Spurs fans, feel however the way you want to feel. This is a very weird moment to be a Tottenham supporter. And if you disagree with me, that is totally fine. If you agree, that's totally fine as well. There is no right answer right now. Nobody knows if this was the right move. Nobody knows if Jose Mourinho will wind up leading this club to the sort of heights that Pochettino could not. Who knows? This is all very weird and kind of feels almost uncharted. I know they've made managerial moves before, but not from a position quite like this. Not so close to having been in a European Championship final. These are weird days. These are weird days. But I tell you, Tottenham fans, there will be good days ahead. The Pochettino years will not be the last good years of this club. Stick with the club. Always stick with the club. JJ, to you I say,
take you later, fun boy.
I'll see you.
Take care, Andrew.